All around the world, teenagers with ED rely on Cialis for Teens. Cialis for Teens is proven to work fast and last up to 36 hours. Before taking Cialis for Teens, ask your pediatrician if you're healthy enough for sexual activity. Then ask your dad to explain exactly what sexual activity is. Do not drink sugary caffeinated energy drinks in excess while taking Cialis for Teens. Cialis for Teens does not protect against STDs or help you get a date with a varsity cheerleader. In the event of an erection lasting more than 4 hours, be sure the bathroom door is locked and have plenty of magazines on hand. Cialis for Teens. When puberty arrives, will you be ready?
Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
Brawny paper towels have always been strong, just like the big lumberjack guy on every roll. But now, Brawny wants to show its softer side. Introducing Brian, the strong, sensitive paper towel.
Brian doesn't just clean up spills. He listens to my problems.
Sure, Brian wears flannel, just like Brawny, but he's lost the mustache and put product in his hair.
Brian will soak up the wet spot and doesn't mind if we cuddle after.
So, for a tough towel that's sturdy yet cares, pick up a roll of Brian.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Easily Offended by Stuff on the Radio. On the drive to work, you tuned to a wacky, zany morning show and heard them say something distasteful. You can't believe your ears. You were just shocked by a shock jock.
Isn't that what a shock jock does?
Now, you're gonna do something about it.
Get that monster fired, yeah.
So the next time you see a guy protesting your favorite morning show because it messed with his PC sensibilities, exercise your First Amendment rights and give a single finger salute to Mr. Easily Offended by Stuff on the Radio, a real American hero.
Mr. Easily Offended by Stuff on the Radio.
You know, there is this thing called a tuner, and it actually lets you change the radio station. Isn't that incredible?
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for the best morning show on radio. It's Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, Kira.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Good. Welcome to February 16th. Today is Tuesday, in case you forgot.
I know. You know I can't keep track.
No, huh?
I really can't. Really can't.
I know. The days just seem to be flying by, you know? Did you notice that? The days and then the weeks.
I feel like the year.
Yeah.
We're already hitting, well, you know, we're February, second month, but still.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're, you know, is it 2010 or 2010 now? What are you saying?
I don't know. Is there one way to say it?
I think they're saying now it's like 2010 as opposed to 2010. Yeah.
Okay.
Who cares? But whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, PC. Yeah. But no, I do. I feel like it feels like stuff goes by quick.
Yeah. And before you know it, it'll be 2011.
I know. What are we going to do then? It's going to be like flipping the new millennium again or whatever. What? Remember that TKY or 2K?
Y2K.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
How crazy it was?
Yeah, and everybody thought all the computers were going to shut down on that day, and it was going to be the end of the world.
People were, like, stocking on batteries, bottles of water. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Was like,
yeah.
Sky
and now they're saying 2012 is going to be the last year we live.
Really?
Yeah. You haven't heard of that?
No,
with
is this like
Mayan, the Mayan calendar and all that bullshit.
Really? But yeah. See, haven't they been predicting this for a while, like Nostradamus and all this stuff?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, what we do know, Sam, is that forever's going to happen one day.
Yeah.
And, you know, things will end one day.
Yeah.
Whether it's,
well, we don't know that. Maybe they
won't.
Well,
we don't know if it's the whole world
it
or
ends
if it's just
for
we
us.
Die, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
Pack a lunch.
Exactly. But they just had the movie 2012 where they were, like, predicting all these natural disasters and stuff.
Yeah,
remember
yeah.
that?
Did you see it?
Yeah, no, I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't catch it either.
No, they said it was pretty bad.
Well, speaking of bad, I just went to watch The Wolfman with Benicio Del Toro and Anthony Hopkins. Have you seen the previews for that?
Yes, I did. And what, you went to a early screening?
No, it came out actually this weekend. It opened on Friday last weekend.
Oh, it did.
And I went with a friend. And I was really excited to go see the movie, thinking, oh, this is going to be great because it's a great cast. I mean, yeah. I love Anthony Hopkins. Put him in a villain role. Crazy. Drooling at the mouth. Love it. Sign me up, right?
Right.
It was such a letdown.
Really?
Ugh, and everybody... It's bad when you're in a movie theater and like death scenes and the whole theater, stadium theater, laughs.
Really?
Yeah, they're laughing. They're breaking out laughing.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is not supposed to be a comedy.
No. No, it's not. No. It's wolves, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, wolves with fangs. Not very funny.
Right.
Unless it's Twilight. But no, anyway. So, unfortunately it was a huge disappointment, I say, you know.
Yeah. They probably concentrated more on the special effects and stuff, huh?
Yeah, and it was actually, part was pretty cool. It really drew you in, and it was fun, but, you know.
Right.
Definitely don't go see it. Do you see a lot of movies, Sam?
Lately, we've been watching more DVDs than movies. Yeah, in fact, we've been planning to go to Avatar for over a month now, and we haven't seen it yet.
You are so behind.
Really?
Avatar.
Uh-huh.
I mean, at this point... It's been so hyped up. You're so overdue to see it.
Right.
That anytime something's hyped,
right.
It's so hard for it to be as enjoyable as what you fabricate because of all the people that are like, Avatar.
Yeah.
But it is a great film.
Yeah, I think I know what to expect. You know, I mean, I'm not into those like cyber movies and things like that. But they're saying like the visual part of it is something unforgettable.
Yeah, like James Cameron created a, I can't remember what it is. It's like a... It's something beyond 3D a little bit more where it actually adds a lot of depth perception to the film to where when you watch it, it's not just stuff popping out. It kind of makes you feel like you're in it. And it is quite cool. Again, going back to...
Did you watch it in 3D?
I did. I spent like $50 on that movie.
Really?
Not really, but almost. What? It was at the like CD-ROM, IMAX cinema.
I see. They charge you more?
And it was a holiday weekend back in Christmas. On the weekend, it was like $18 or something.
Really?
Yeah, I had to take out a loan for it. It was ridiculous. So I was like, man, this better be good.
Yeah.
Better do my taxes or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but
in
good
the IMAX, it was nice.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a little hyped. I would go to a stadium. You don't need to do IMAX. Just go like a stadium theater.
Right.
Do it 3D because it is fun. It's worth it. And just don't go on a holiday or weekend. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well,
by now, I think it's dropped off quite a bit. You know? So I don't think there's lines.
Movies out here are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Matinee's like $15.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is expensive. But you know what? You go to New York City, it costs 50% more probably. You'll
really?
Probably pay $15 by now.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Everything there is expensive. I mean, you know, like a pack of cigarettes here, you buy for about $6 or so.
Uh-huh.
In New York, it's $10.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are there a lot of smokers there?
I don't know, but I don't know what it has to do with, but it's just the cost of living.
Yeah.
In New York is a lot higher than
Sounds like the cost of being a smoker is a lot higher, too.
Yeah, it is.
You really think about your habits.
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, price hasn't made me stop yet, so we'll
really?
See. Yeah. We'll
How
see
long
when
have you
that's going to happen. I've been smoking off and on since I was in my teens.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how do you feel? Like, how does your body feel? Like, can you tell any kind of, you know, difference or...
Difference from what? I mean,
I
don't know
right?
anything
You're like, since
else.
Birth, I came out with 3 packs a day.
Exactly.
I don't know. But
I mean,
do you feel like shortness of breath? Is it hard to run? Or, you know, I don't know if you run.
I don't try to run,
Yeah.
The thing is this. The point where I stop is the day where I'm going to start working out and everything, you know.
And then
when you're athletic, you don't think of yourself as a smoker, you know. So, but I'm not ready. You know what? As you get older, it gets harder.
Which part?
To kick the
Any habit, right?
I think so, yeah. But especially cigarettes.
Yeah.
It's been with me all my life.
Wow. You know, it's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, not to diminish it, because I do think there are serious effects of long-term smoking.
Right.
At the same time, I think genetics play a big part of it, too, because I know people like the cholesterol thing and bacon and eggs. And there's some people that live till they're like 100 eating bacon and eggs every day. And then some people that have, you know, heart attacks at 50. You know? And it's just like... kind of, I think, whatever's hereditary, too.
Exactly. You know, and I'm not so afraid of cancer for some reason. For some reason, I feel I'm not going to get cancer, you know.
That's funny.
But we have
Kids
to go somehow, you know.
Kids, do not listen to Sam. Sam is a rogue. He is a rebel. Do not listen to Sam. He's just trusting his gene, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm living on the edge.
You're living on the edge.
And it is living on the edge. You know, I mean, you're killing yourself when you smoke. That's for sure.
That's a fun you know? Time. That's a party for you, Sam.
Yeah, there you go, huh?
That's funny. Oh, man.
So you dressed all to a T today.
Yeah,
I mean, you're all in black. It's beautiful. I love black.
Really?
You'll notice I wear a lot of black.
It's such a great color. It's such a great color.
It really is, you know?
I've got two auditions today, and I'm not going to have time to go home and change. So one's like right after the show, and it's for a show called Fast Track to Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, sign me up for that. They say in L.A., they say it takes 10 years to be an overnight success.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm pushing 10. So I'm like, fast track me all day long, put me in the fast track. And they're looking for female comics, so I'm going to go in there. And then later today I have one for like a red carpet host type thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Well, yeah, we're gonna find out a thing or two about this today, about making it in Hollywood. We're going to be talking to Larry Minetti, who used to be on Magnum P.I. He was Tom Selleck's sidekick. And so his story is he moved from somewhere else to L.A. I think he was born in Chicago, and he moved here. And he also, I mean, he was really lucky to land that role. And we're going to find out from him, like, what does it take? You know, I mean, how do you get there? What do you need to make it?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
This is one person that has made it, you know?
Yeah, and there's a different time, too, right, when he was like...
Yeah, I mean, that was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you weren't born yet, huh?
Oh, you're right. I was born in 99. No, I was born in the 80s.
In the 80s.
Oh, yeah. I got my Madonna on, my New Kids on the Block. You know, I got all the Depeche Mode.
But you were young when that stuff was going on.
I was young. Yeah. I was young. But, you know, I'm at the age now. Oh, I'm not at the age, but I'm at the age now where I know people that are born like in 87 and 86.
And they seem young?
They're young, and I'm like, I can't believe I know people that I talk to that are born in 87. I was born in the early 80s. But I was just thinking, like, that's just so, you know, young. What is 87 anyway? What does that make you?
In 87?
Yeah.
Oh, that's 22, right?
Yeah, that's weird.
22. 23.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It's probably weird for you, too.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about the year you were born or no?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I was born in 1960.
1960.
Yeah. Does that seem like ancient to you? It probably does, huh?
Well, you were born in the 60s, which was like, what, the sex revolution?
Right. Except I was a kid when that was happening.
Yeah, so you weren't getting
But
down.
My teens were in the 70s, you know? So I grew up with all the great music and drugs and rock and roll, you know?
It's a good time.
Yeah, and I was living in Vegas at the time,
really?
Too. Yeah, in the 70s.
That
the late
70s. Crazy.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. It was much smaller, obviously, than it is now. And there was partying going on all the time. I mean, we drive up and down the strip, picking up chicks and stuff,
going
to parties.
When did you move to the States?
I moved to the States in 1976.
Okay.
And I was 16 years old at the time.
And then did you guys move straight to Vegas?
Actually, it wasn't you guys. It was me alone.
Without your family?
Yeah.
What?
They sent me out here, but I actually lived with relatives, you know, so it's not like I was completely on my own.
Oh, that's crazy,
But still, it is. It is. I mean, you want to talk about a turning point in someone's life,
16 years old. Hey, we want you to have a good, better life. Go to Vegas.
Exactly, and like sort of one foot in the door, and then they joined me 5 years later.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's quite a story, you know. And
that's so crazy.
Changed my
life. Did you learn English here or over there?
I learned a lot over there.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
I mean, you have to starting at fifth grade, they make you learn English.
Okay.
Yeah. So they joke over there that it's the 51st state.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's so Americanized in so many ways, you know?
Yeah.
And you go there, you go to a mall, and some of them are even fancier than what we have here.
Yeah.
All the brand names are in English, you know, from the United States, from Europe.
Yeah.
What have you. It's a very modern place.
I know. I've heard it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it is really nice. I like going there sometimes to visit. But not too much, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because one thing that really gets to me is the people there are not polite.
Really?
When you don't know them. In other words, when you're on the road, okay? The drivers. People are just like, or when you wait in line and stuff, there's no such thing as lines, you know? People just sort of like group around. Like if you're going to take the bus or something, right? And you got there first. If you don't push your way in, you're going to be last getting on the bus. Things
like
that.
More of a survival mode? More of like a...
Kind of, you know? But it's like people are not... They're not nice to you. You know, everybody wants to be first at everything.
Oh.
But when you know the people, when it's your family, your friends and stuff, there's no nicer people anywhere.
You know, I find that with different some cultures, it's like what I've heard about people in LA is that there's a really kind of laid back, fun, kind of nice vibe, but there's no follow through, there's no real commitment, right. There's no real genuine or sincere. However, like the East Coast, people are a lot more gruff, a lot more speak their mind, but they're honest and they're loyal.
Exactly.
So when you make friends with them, boom, they're friends.
Yeah.
Is it kind of like that? Like on the exterior is a little bit more like, this is what, you know, say what we think.
Right.
You know, a little more aggressive. But
yeah, yeah, it's a lot more like that. You know, I mean, there's a lot of plastic in L.A., you know. I mean, whether the way people look, the way they behave, you know, and you have to get used to it. It's not easy.
I know. I have friends that I've been trying to get to move here because, like I said, I love it here. I mean, it's like so great. And she's just like, why would I ever want to? I mean, I was outside of a bar, and it's a local bar near my house. I love it. Mm-hmm. So laid back, so fun, and it's just like a bar slash restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the bar, the lady that owns the bar, she's a staple in the neighborhood. Funny, she'll get up on the bar, she'll hula hoop, it's just really fun. It's really fun. Anyway, one night we're out in the patio. I have friends from out of town from Texas. I'm like, yeah, you guys should move here. This place is great. She comes outside. Mm-hmm. Turns the lights full on in the bar, mm-hmm. and there's three guys, and she's standing at the entrance to her bar, not blocking it, not letting them in. And they're cussing her, and she's a woman, uh-huh. and she's standing there packing batteries in a taser. She's packing heat, Sam. Boom, boom, boom. I was like, what the hell is about to go down? I had to move out of the way. And these guys are like, talking to her. She goes, I'm not going to play. You're going to get tased. What do you want? How do you want to do this? Pack a lunch.
Really?
Yeah, and the guy tried to kick her,
uh-huh.
and he kind of like gave a wussy kind of kick because he was kind of drunk. He's like, kick. And like she moved, and he kind of hit her arm, and then she just swung back and tased his foot.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
were they the only people in the bar and you?
No. I mean, the bar was packed.
So there were like a lot of people.
The thing is that the bar was packed. She tased this guy's foot. It was hysterical, actually. She wasn't fretting 1 second. She was like, mm-hmm, do it again. Do it again. Let me tase you. Let me tase that kneecap.
Wow.
And nobody... Here's the thing. Like, no man that was sitting outside or that was viewing it stood up and walked up and tried to help.
Yeah.
Like, nobody did.
She didn't need any help. Apparently.
Well, I get it, but it's just like, you know, you're a woman, and it's like, men in this town go and work out to build big muscles, and then when it's time to actually defend.
That's for strength. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one thing to go, you know what, I don't want to start. Don't get in there and be a big shot, but be there as a protector.
Right.
And my friends were sitting there from out of town. They're like, yeah, we're not moving here, Kara. Not going to happen. I was like, this doesn't happen every day, guys. But they're like, yeah, we're not moving here. And I was like, it's just a taser.
So there's
come
people
on.
From back in Texas?
Back in Texas.
Yeah, well, what do they know in a small town, you know?
Well, they're actually from Houston, which is a big town. But still, it doesn't compare. It doesn't compare, you know?
So did you ever live in Houston, too, or just
no,
in a little town?
No, I was a small freaking town. In fact, my dad's girlfriend, this is going to sound so white trash, because it is, actually. Because it is, people. No, but she owned a bar called Junior's Drive-In. And we grew up going to the bar.
Really?
Yeah, we'd get to play pool. We'd get to order Cokes and sodas and put it on my dad's bar tab and run around a smoky bar. And something about that's not right.
Right.
But I turned out okay.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, or kind of.
We don't know. We're going to find out.
So funny. So, yeah. Very, very small town.
Yeah, wow.
Crazy.
Yeah. So you grew up there all your life pretty much until you moved here, right?
Pretty much, yeah, in this small little town. I mean, it's not outside of civilization. It's just...
Right.
You know, in what they call an unzoned area. So, you know, you can have... We had water... There's waterfront property that was quite nice and expensive.
Really?
But then literally a few streets down, it could be like a trailer park with like five dogs and a dilapidated, you know, truck.
Right.
You know, that had a bunch of more dogs underneath
it. Yeah.
So it was kind of like that.
So did you go to small schools and stuff too?
Yeah, I went to public school. But it's different out there. Public school is not like a big flipping deal. Like out here, people are like, don't send your kid to public school. Get him in private school. You got to get on the waiting list for 3 years for preschool.
Right.
And it's like $10,000 a semester. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous out here.
Right.
It's like people do not send their kids or do not want to send their kids
to public schools.
To public schools. Yeah. And in Texas, I mean, the school system's pretty good.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, I volunteer with my friend's high school class doing kind of presentations and things like that. And these kids don't have textbooks.
Mm.
I'm like, who doesn't have textbooks?
Yeah.
But they don't have textbooks. And it's just like, you know, it's really just, and this state is just very different when it comes to education.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it's not very great here. I guess we focus more on entertainment.
Yeah, it's like, you know, yeah. Oh, they'll figure it out. You know, who needs to add and subtract? We're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. It's like, I guess just the schools are really overloaded and, you know, they don't get that kind of attention. And
right.
I wonder about maybe the violence and gang violence and stuff like that. I'm,
yeah.
Not just
Did
gang
you have any violence there in the small town?
I mean, you see fights. You see fights, but it wasn't like mob fights or... You know, we didn't have metal detectors. We did have a kid bring a gun to school one time. Only once, Sam. Not a big deal. Didn't fire it. Totally not a big deal. But, yeah, that was it. But it's not like... But out here, it's just there's just, like, such a fear about sending your kid to public school. And yeah. I think maybe... I don't know. Maybe there's a good reason for it. But.
Yeah. Would you raise kids out here? I mean, you wouldn't have a choice if you live here.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think, you know... Every place comes with different struggles, and I think some of the advantages of raising your kids out here is that they're exposed to all different subcultures, ethnicities, creeds. So the diversity can breed a lot of flavor and tolerance, and just acceptance. And I think that that's actually really cool, and learning people to be people regardless of differences.
Right.
At the same time, there's too many things here that are so available to kids.
Right.
Drugs, sex, I mean, just tons and tons of things that, you know, it's a little harder for your kid in other places to get that. They can get it too, but it's just, you know, like letting your kid go outside and just run around and play with their friend on a bicycle. I mean, here, where do you do that?
Yeah.
You have to live outside of L.A.
Yeah, it's really scary.
You have kids, right?
Yes.
And did you raise them?
Well, they're grown, yes. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you have to take them everywhere by car and stuff. You know, where I grew up, you were never with your parents, you know? It's like, you know, you take the bus, you'd walk, whatever, take your bike. You know?
Oh, in Israel, it was just like the
public
transportation.
Yeah, it was different. And
like,
the 60s also. You know what I mean? Yeah. The 60s here were also pretty safe.
Yeah, yeah. But your kids raising them here in L.A., were you concerned? I mean...
Yeah, well, yeah, I still am, you know. But,
really?
But they went to public schools, and they came out okay. So,
there you go. Well, there you go.
Yeah, there's some good schools, you know.
Maybe it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Hey, have you been watching the Olympics?
No. Have you?
Not really.
No, because in L.A., we don't really relate to Winter Olympics, you know?
We're like, it's so cold, really? Like,
but those sports, we don't even know them. I mean, the luge, you know, and all that. I mean, but I do love the Olympics, but the Summer Olympics more.
I like the ones where you can get a tan. I like those.
Yeah,
what
those
about,
where they
you,
swim and...
Did you know. Obviously heard about the death.
Yes. So
okay.
What was he, like Yugoslavian or something?
He was from
Georgia, right?
Georgia,
that's
Georgia.
Right.
We were talking about this on set the other day about how they kept showing the footage of him actually dying.
Uh-huh.
And they were saying that's pretty much like a snuff video.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, that there's something about that. It's really disrespectful,
right.
I think. I guess I was wondering, you know, if you've seen it. I haven't seen him... You know, the death part.
Right.
I just didn't want to see it. But, you know,
so they were showing actually
over and over and over.
Was he like ejected from this thing or
something?
He
basically was going so fast and it kind of slid up the side and just popped out and was going 90 miles an hour and hit a beam that wasn't guarded, wasn't, you know, padded. And just they think it was like death instantly. But apparently, I think that he may have bounced a few times and then boom, hit this thing.
Really?
And
but you wouldn't watch it.
I mean, it's the death of like somebody that's really trying to go after a huge dream.
Right.
And there's just something about it's morbid, and I think in a way it's disrespectful to the person's death and to the country, and you know, and I mean, it's important to acknowledge it and respect it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was wondering if you'd seen it or.
There's something to that, you know. I think to what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's kind of like. Snuff video. Like,
yeah, I suppose.
Online.
But what about those pictures they showed in Haiti of all these bodies on the streets and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, they're showing you dead people and stuff. I think we've become more tolerant to seeing things like this, you know, maybe desensitized, you know, to the fact that, you know, we take it for granted that these things are okay, you know?
You know, it's really hard because, like, you take things like the Holocaust, and it's something that... You know, you watch the films, you watch Schindler's List, you go to the Holocaust museums, and you make yourself look at it because it's a reminder of tragedy that you never want it to happen again. And
right.
It's like almost looking at something and going, this did happen.
Right. And confront the reality of
exactly,
it, you know?
Exactly. And yeah. I think that there's a different spirit behind it. There's
right.
a different purpose behind that. But not the sensationalism of it. It's just kind of right. like, hey, guys, this is the ugly truth.
Right.
And so something like Haiti, I mean, I don't really know if I agree or disagree with them showing images of people deceased.
Right.
I mean, that's so hard. But you know what I've heard about Haiti isn't the lack of funds. I mean, we could keep raising money.
Right.
It's that
right.
people can't get there.
Right.
They cannot get aid. A friend of a friend, his dad is in the part of the Doctors Beyond Borders.
Right.
And it took him like weeks to get out there.
Really?
To get on a plane to get out there, because most of their airport was destroyed.
Right.
And their ship channels, everything was just demolished. So
right.
it's like getting in there and just getting aid, because people were dying. They said people in the next couple weeks are going to die, like about 100,000 is what they project. Not
right.
because it's all from preventable illness. It's like it's like staph infections. It's like somebody broke a bone. It just needs to be reset. It doesn't get reset.
Right.
And then they die from it. Like,
right.
you know, the marrow or whatever, like
yeah.
leaks into the blood. So it's just basic care. They can't get
wow.
basic care.
Yeah. Because that's not what we heard, actually. That's why it's interesting that you say that, because we had a woman that actually was there for a couple of weeks,
uh-huh.
and she had been on the show before. So after she went to Haiti, she contacted me, and she was on the show, actually. And she said that they've got more money than they know what to do with. That,
yeah.
Which is what you said, too, that they don't need money. They just need to be able to get access.
They need to get people that can get there to help.
Right. But she claimed that it wasn't, you know, other than the downtown and stuff, you know, where there were a lot of buildings. She said that, you know, it wasn't, I mean, they were recovering quickly, you know, and stuff. So go figure, you know, some of the things we thought were going on, she said that didn't go on. So I don't
oh,
know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess after the first or second day, she said they didn't see like bodies or anything on the streets.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So they must have cleaned it all up in that. But I did read that it's going to be a nation of amputees, you know, because so many people have lost limbs because of this earthquake, you know.
What was the what was the point? Was it like 7 or
like
eight?
7 point something. Yeah.
Do
even 7.0 is
you were
is
here for Northridge
high.
Earthquake?
Yeah, actually that's an interesting story, because a week before that, my family and I, my wife at the time and my kids,
mm-hmm.
we moved to Vegas exactly a week before it happened.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And I mean, we lived in Chatsworth, which is right next
yeah.
to you know.
Wow.
Yeah, so we didn't go through it, but I did see the damage around here. It
do,
was pretty
do you remember what
intense.
That was as far as on the Richter scale? Like what the
No, I don't. I absolutely don't. But it was probably 6 point something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean our buildings are much more resistant to it, but still there was a lot of major damage.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
malls were collapsed and parking structures.
Yeah.
Apartment building. So yeah, it was pretty interesting.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. So let's take a moment and call our guest. We're gonna call Larry Manetti. He wrote a book called Aloha Magnum, and he was Tom Selleck's sidekick in Magnum PI. And so let me call him. I believe he's in LA.
Cool.
So he's not too far, yeah. We're gonna find out from him. I guess I have to put him one here. And here we go. We're going to call Larry Manetti.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, let me bring this up so we can hear him. And so you probably don't remember the series. You were young.
I mean, I definitely heard of it, but yeah, I don't remember
yeah,
it too much.
Yeah. I wasn't a big fan, but...
Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Manetti. This is Sam and Kira calling you from LA Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
I see you're in LA just like us, huh?
What?
I said you're in L.A. just like we are.
Yeah, I am. Are you guys just L.A. or international?
No, you can hear us everywhere, but we're based here in Sherman Oaks.
Oh, you're close to me.
Yeah,
right?
I know. That's what I figured. So are you originally from L.A., Larry?
No, I'm from Chicago, Illinois.
I see. And when did you move out?
1972, September. That's in my book. Did you guys read my book?
I read part of it, indeed.
Mm.
Indeed. You're from Chicago.
If you remember, I left in September of 72.
Right.
And got lost and went through Texas twice.
Oh, you did?
Really? Which part of Texas?
Yeah. I don't know, but I know that I went through Texas because there was a stockyard there, and when I went through the stockyard again, I said, something's wrong.
Uh-huh. That's fine. You're not on the way to L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Are we on the air?
Yes, we're on the air.
Oh, we are. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, this is live, of course. And so you came out with your book, Aloha Magnum, and this tells the story of you obviously being Rick as Tom Selleck's sidekick. And I was reading the part where you actually got the part, and that was obviously a very lucky thing by your own admission. Tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Well, I was under contract to Universal Studios at the time because I had done two other television series. One was Baba Black Sheep, and the other was a series called Chase, which was short-lived. And, when you're under contract, you're bouncing around fighting for good roles and hoping that you find something that, you know, that could put you up there.
Yeah.
An actor hopes for at least one hit in his lifetime. And I was supposedly going to be on Simon & Simon, and they put me on a show called The Rockford Files with James Gardner.
Uh-huh.
And they had a guest star by the name of Tom Selleck, who I never heard of or met.
Uh-huh.
And I was lying in an auditorium with a duffel bag under my head at 6 o'clock in the morning, uh-huh, nursing a cup of coffee. And Simon Oakland, the character actor, was next to me. And there was about 2,000 people in there with this undertone, you know, early in the morning. And all of a sudden I heard a dead silence. And I looked up, and there through the door was walking this 6'4" guy in a white suit and a suntan.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at Simon Oakland and I said, who is that guy? I said, he's prettier than Elizabeth Taylor.
That's true.
Wow, that's
funny. And he said, well, that's Tom Selleck. Uh-huh. So I met him, and we did the Rockford Files together, got along great. And then Universal said to me, you know, we've got this great series that's going to come out, and a terrific script, and everybody says that you're perfect for this character, a Rick.
Right.
Would you read it? I said, yeah, you know, I'll read it, but I want to do Simon & Simon because Phil DeGuerre was a friend of mine, and I knew that this show would have legs. I read it, and I really liked it. And they said, who's playing Magnum? They said, oh, a new guy. His name's Tom Selleck. I said, that's it. I jumped ship, and I went in. But I had an audition, which means read, you know, mm-hmm, for CBS twice,
uh-huh,
which was grueling. And they finally said, you're the guy, and that was it. But, you know, I never expected Magnum to go. Went almost 9 years.
Yeah.
Wow, that's such a success.
I always thought I was on a lease. I never bought a home. I always rented an apartment.
Right.
And always had my suitcase close.
Yeah.
Really?
And that's interesting because, you know,
yeah,
when you look at the concept of it, you know, I mean, a Ferrari, Hawaii, beautiful girls, and a lot of money and stuff, it sounds like it would be a pretty successful show, especially in the 80s.
Well, it is, but you got to keep in mind that I had been on two other television series, and both of them were canceled. And both of them were canceled right in the middle of the day, right in the middle of a scene.
Wow.
I mean, they just walked in and said, that's it, and they turned the lights off. We're pulling the plug. The show's over.
Really?
So I was gun-shy and just never believed that anything was going to last forever. Only the rocks live forever.
Right.
So, you know, so, I mean, it was not that I poo-pooed the show. The show was number one. I was very happy. I knew the chemistry was bulletproof. But I always knew that there was going to be an end, and that was just, you know, like I said, gun shy. So, but it worked out. We all got along marvelously. Roger E. Mosley and I were together this weekend signing autographs in Burbank, California.
Right.
And I see Selleck, you know, at least once a week for dinner.
Wow.
John Hillerman lives in Houston. Everybody's asking us if we're going. You're probably going to ask me this anyway, so I'll save you the time about the reunion. About the reunion show.
Oh, cool.
Right.
And all I could say is that we all want to do it. And the problem is that I figured out is Universal Studios owns Magnum. Universal Studios has been purchased 3 or 4 times, and every time it's purchased, we fall between the cracks.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah. So the only thing I could say, and I'm sure there's a lot of producers and guys out there, anybody with a brain in their head should go to Universal and say, I want to do the Magnum movie because they can buy us, you know, at a good price.
Right.
And there's enough fans out there. We're in 58 countries. And believe me, I know, and whoever makes this movie is going to make a killing.
Right. Now, you got to live in Hawaii for 8 seasons of the show. And
so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously some people, that's a dream for them.
A rough life, huh?
Yeah, so you get the dream job, and you probably make a nice living out of that.
I loved it. Yeah, well, I learned how to play tennis.
Right.
And I played golf. The only thing I didn't do is play in the ocean because they got big, big sharks.
Oh, really?
And, that's something that, that's also in my book. I mean,
yeah.
I saw big, big, big tiger sharks, 22, 21 feet.
But do they come in that close? Do they come in that close?
Pardon me?
Do they come in that close where you don't want to, like, at least just get
your... Oh, you bet. You know, really? Listen, I can tell you this, and I'm, you know, I'll probably get a lot of cards and letters saying bad, bad boy, but, you know, with these tropical islands, you never hear about the people that are missing. You know, you hear about people that are hit because the lifeguards bring them in.
Right.
But a lot of people never come back.
Oh, really?
And, wow. That's scary.
Yeah, and that's a thing I don't like to get into it, but I'm going to give anybody fair warning. If you decide to swim way out there, just remember, these things are like submarines, and they're hungry.
Yes.
And you're on their turf, and if you're out there, tough luck, because they'll, you know, a big white or a tiger will gobble you up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I don't blame you for not going to the ocean.
Yeah, that kind of freaked me out. That freaked me out. I have to rethink my Hawaii trip. Hey, I want to ask you, so talking about your fans, what does your fan base look like today? When you go do a book signing and you're out there, who's showing up? What do they look like?
Well, you know, I have... It's cute you asked that, because I had a little girl come that was 10.
Aww.
And I said, honey, how do you know who I am? Well, I watch you. And, you know, and they don't know. Today,
that's
these
sweet.
Kids are brought up, and, you know, reruns to them is just regular television. They don't know what reruns are. We grew up with NBC, CBS, and ABC. You know, today there's 10 billion channels.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, so, but so the fan base is enormous, and Magnum is a show that can go on forever because, you know, it's just not dated.
Right, yeah. It's timeless, right.
You know?
Yes. Well, so you were there for 8 years. I'm sure that set you for life pretty much, right, as far as financially?
Well, I don't have to sell pencils. But
yeah, there you go. That's pretty good. So it leaves you the time to write a book
funny.
And everything.
So you're not planning on selling Avon, or you're good?
No, but you know, when I started out, I sold encyclopedias door to door.
Really? So
I worked at a gas station. I mean, you hear all these stories about actors, but I'm not lying. I mean, I worked in factories. You know, I mean, I paid my dues. I did what everybody else did, and I put my pants on the same way.
Yeah.
I know what it is to make a living. I know what it is to struggle, and I know what it is to put your head down and say, where do I get the next buck to pay my rent?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
But,
I feel like that concept is kind of diminishing in, like, I mean, I'm doing the acting thing out here in Hollywood, and I'm kind of in that place. You talk to people, and it's like they sometimes they have more of an entitled attitude nowadays. It's like, what? Get a job where I have to work retail? No. And it's like, you know, if you've got a dream, don't you struggle for it? Don't you actually sacrifice for it? So it's good to, you know, be reminded of that.
Well, you know, I don't know how to even go into this because, you know, look, it's, you know, when I grew up, I had to work. You know, my father threw me out. I had a newspaper route and I did everything. I sold watermelons at a fruit and vegetable stand. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
And all my brothers and sisters did, and we were raised right. You know, today I have a son that's a writer-producer, and he struggles. It's very hard out there today. I don't know. I wish I could put my finger on why. It just seems that everything is getting tougher. You know, we're always, it seems like, I don't want to get into politics. That's not where we're at.
Right.
But
it's probably,
you know, the only thing I can say is God bless the United States and thank God we're here.
Yeah. And I think there's just a lot more competition, a lot more people fighting for the same jobs, you know?
Yeah, in all arenas.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, that's true. But, you know, I do believe one thing. If you want something bad enough, you'll get it.
Yes. Mm. Now, there was one part in the book that I found entertaining, which you mentioned the difference in height between you and Tom Selleck, and you had to wear special shoes for
that's
that.
That's funny, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tom's 6'4" and a half.
Really?
And, yeah, and I'm 5'7".
Okay.
Right.
So
that's,
you know,
quite
when I was a kid, my father said to me, you know, you're the average height. Well, maybe, you know, in World War II I was,
right.
But I wasn't around. But
that's fine.
Anyway, I had a difficult time because that's a big guy, man. Mm.
That know, is. Makes you feel small.
A lot
small.
Of times I'd be in the sand and you'd shrink in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hey, I got to do something. So I went to a guy that makes shoes, and he was like the shoe man for the stars, and he built these great shoes, these boots
so awesome.
That lifted me up about 4 inches.
Really?
You know,
and
what?
I wore them throughout the show, and I had all kinds of cowboy boots, and I had shoes that were alligator loafers. I mean, he became a master at doing this. And they finally nicknamed the shoes, and people are buying them today, called the Minettis.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
That's so cool. You know what?
Yeah.
Guys should have their own version of heels. You know what I mean? They need to – heels, adding height, it's slimming. It's just – it's so awesome.
Right.
I think guys
yeah.
should be able to get on that.
But how
well,
did
you – I mean, I wasn't – I'm not embarrassed. I mean, I don't wear them now because I'm not right. doing the show. But, I mean, if someone's – not, you know, if God weren't an open-minded guy when he was born, and he's 5'6", or 5'5", or 5'7", or 5'9", whatever, there's nothing wrong with getting a pair of shoes to lift you up a little bit.
That's true, but, I mean, what was it like walking in them?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're awesome. You don't even know. I mean,
oh,
I
really?
Walked in them, ran in them,
really?
Jumped off of
wow.
porches, everything. Yeah, they're if they're made right, they're awesome. They're
right.
not cheap, but, you know, but you keep them for years.
Right. Amazing. Now, I also wanted to add that in your book, you've put in some recipes. You're a pretty good cook, you claim.
Well, I mean, I've been cooking since I'm a kid. I've had 5 restaurants, one of which was with Tom Selleck.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another restaurant with Robert Conrad, who was from Wild Wild West fame.
Right.
And, you know, when you're young and you got 5 brothers and sisters, you learn how to cook yourself because...
Yeah.
You know, when they say here's dinner, it's like sharks in a frenzy. But I put like I can't remember how many I put in the book. I've got quite a few, but I made them for Sinatra and Borgnine and Carol Burnett.
Oh wow!
And the list goes on.
Right.
Wow. What restaurants? What restaurants have you been a part of?
I had well with Selleck, I had the Black Orchid,
uh-huh.
which was a terrific restaurant in Honolulu,
oh,
and.
Wow.
We had Sammy Davis there. I mean, we had some pretty big names because Honolulu, you know, and especially in the 80s, was a great watering hole.
Wow.
And
right.
then I had the Last Run, which was a ski resort in Bear Valley with Robert Conrad.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good. So, so definitely, I mean, that's a nice bonus in the book if you guys like to eat. What kind of food is it generally? Italian food?
Well, most of it's Italian food, and that's right. mostly what I cook.
Right.
But, I mean, I can cook some other things, you know. It's but the recipes are all from my family. And, you know, there's sometimes I explore. I'm right now, as we're talking, I'm making notes, but I'm writing another book, and I'm going to add, like, 20 recipes to that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you should try the recipes. You got the book. Try them.
Yeah,
definitely.
I'm definitely. I mean, they sound delicious.
Sounds
you know?
Very Food Network.
I'm not into cooking, but I think my wife will get into this.
Yeah,
I'm going to make sure.
Try it now. Yeah. So you know, my book is not in the stores.
Okay.
I reprinted it because when the publishing company had it, they went bankrupt. Well, I was in New York doing Regis.
I see.
And they told me, get it home on your own. We're out of business. So
really?
I bought all the books and reprinted them. So if anybody would like to try my book,
yes.
all they have to do is touch LarryMinetti.com.
Okay.
Cool.
And definitely on the site you'll see a nice gallery and some more information on Larry. Larry, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you, guys. I really enjoyed this. Thank you
absolutely.
So much.
And the book, everybody go get it. It's Aloha Magnum by Larry Minetti. All the best to you, Larry, and good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take
Thanks.
Care. So that's Larry Minetti.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah, he sounds pretty fun, huh?
He does. I like hearing stories about, you know, I was with Sammy Davis and, you know, Carol Burnett, and they just hung out with all the greats. You're like,
yeah.
man, what a time, huh?
I know.
Yeah, I had a restaurant in Honolulu. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
You see? So that just makes you want to try working harder even.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I like hearing, you know, people in their before stories and how they've done it. It's just so, it's to me, it's very confirming. Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Now, have you gotten an agent yet?
You know, I haven't really put a lot of effort into that direction because I'm kind of seeing that it's like Pandora's box, finding an agent. There's really no right or wrong way to do it, but you have to be creative. And usually a lot of times it works best through referrals. But I've actually been doing pretty good on my own. So I kind of feel, I'm kind of now at the point of like, if you build it, they will come. Like, you start doing your own thing. And because I'm so specific as far as my talent and my vision, it's like, if I just build it, do my shows, build a fan base, then I have something to really work with. Like, I'm just working on writing and going to be doing some filming and, you know, kind of building my own projects and especially doing, you know, like the stand-up comedy. And I've booked a lot of gigs on my own, and I know a lot of people that have representation that they're not getting any
auditions.
I know,
you go to a lot of auditions and stuff. You know, some people don't even bother, you know, so that's
active. I know, Sam, like so many people that have agents, and they're like, oh, it's slow, I'm not going out, I'm not getting auditions. And I'm kind of like, well, you know, I don't really know if I'm missing out right now. I know that there's going to come a time where I get to a certain level where I'm going to need them.
Right.
But until then, I'm doing pretty good. And I think, you know, building momentum on my own is going to be stronger to then be able to partner with the right agent and the right manager. But until then, you know, I'm booking my gigs and, you know.
Right.
Going on auditions, and so it's actually working out pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this.
The morning show that's on your mind. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Now let's get back to Sam in the Morning right here on LA Talk Radio.
Let's get back. Let's get back to Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That's some hard rock for you.
Wow.
Right in the morning to blow out your ears.
Love it.
Yeah.
It's better than coffee.
Better than coffee.
Not really. I love my coffee.
Yeah, I know. I gotta have coffee the first thing in the morning. Otherwise, you can't even talk to me. I'm like a wild animal.
You know, I'm with you. I mean, going back to cigarettes, my version would be, you know, Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Or 20 bucks, whatever you want to call it. Same thing, right?
That's seriously a good one. I never heard that one before.
Well, it's basically that, right? It's
yeah.
Just one of the
it is expensive,
coffee.
Huh?
Yeah. I used to actually work for Starbucks for 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
3 years is a long time.
It is a long time of your life.
Wow.
I used to call the mean, dirty green.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very fun. It's a social fun job, but it is
right.
Really physically hard, believe it or not.
It is, huh?
Yeah, like people would get, a lot of people there get like carpal tunnel
mm-hmm.
in their wrists.
Really?
For working the espresso machine, and you're doing a lot of the same motions repetitively, and it just
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's
wow.
kind of hard. I know, you wouldn't think it, right?
No. And then everybody wanting special drink and
oh man, it's
man,
ridiculous.
I think about that, and I feel sorry for the people that work there. You know?
I think there's just something weird when you take one. I mean, I've waited tables, and I found that, you know, getting people's food order and modifying it was not as hard as working at Starbucks modifying a beverage, a single beverage.
Right.
Because it's so many different specifications for, like, a freaking drink.
I know.
You know?
I know.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
And I do
always,
it every morning.
Yeah, I know. And it's like the foam has to be just right.
Yeah. Yeah, quad grande, iced mocha, 4-pump mocha, 1-pump vanilla, non-fat sugar-free to the 10th power.
Yeah, what part of town did you work in?
I actually worked all over because when you work with a company, you can kind of pick up shifts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I was started off over at Riverside Fulton in Sherman Oaks,
mm-hmm.
and then I worked off of, I actually worked at a very Hollywoodish place that's very exclusive off of Mulholland. They have
mm-hmm.
a place called Beverly Glen,
uh-huh.
and there's a little center there, and there's a Starbucks there. It's nestled away. It's a lots of stars would come in.
Right, I
yeah.
would imagine.
Like,
yeah.
One morning, we have, like, with Starbucks, you can't open if certain things aren't in place as far as with the safe and the money and everything. So one morning, we were having some technical difficulties, so we were running a little behind, and we couldn't open the store. So you get the crazy mob at 6 a.m. that wants you to open. They're outside.
They're
like,
upset.
You know, they're shaking their hands. They're playing with their hair. They look like they're, you know, they're scratching themselves. They're like, we need our coffee. It's really like a bunch of addicts. So one morning, you know, I went up there, and I said, hey, guys, we're running a little behind. We have some technical difficulties, but we'll be open in about 10 minutes. And I already went over there to the crazy people and calmed them down, talked them off the ledge. And I walked away because I had a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there doing more work, and I hear this. I was like, oh, give me a break, man. I just went over to you crazy people. So I just reacted, and I did one of those, ugh. Like, my hands threw it up, and I was like, what? What do you want? And I turned around and looked, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And it was like I start walking towards the door,
mm-hmm.
and I see this little woman, and I go, oh, well, there goes my American Idol career.
Mm-hmm.
It was Paula Abdul.
Really?
She got pissed. She was pissed.
Yeah.
I was like, I said, yes. She goes, what's going on here? What's going on here? I said, well, we can't open. I just literally told everybody we can't open for another 10 minutes.
Yeah.
She goes, well, what are you saying? I'm saying, well, you can't come in for 10 more minutes. Well, what are you saying? I can't get my coffee now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, unless you want to go down the road to 7-Eleven or something, yeah, you can't get your coffee now.
Right.
She goes, but you don't have to do this. You don't have to get an attitude. I said,
yeah.
I said, it's not personal, Paula.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I even called her Paula.
Really?
I was like, it's not personal, Paula. I said, I just, you know, I'm trying to work. And she goes,
was that the first time you saw her there?
No, I've seen her there. I saw her there several times.
Okay,
yeah.
So she knew you worked there, and
I mean, she didn't know anybody, yeah. But I mean, she wasn't like, there was no first name basis. She was out to lunch a lot
yeah,
of times. Yeah,
yeah.
Just not really, you know, lights are on, no one's home type.
Yeah,
type
she
vibe.
Sounds like a bitch, you know. I mean, everywhere you read, she sounds like a bitch.
You just never. I mean, people. You know, I wouldn't. I don't know her, so I can't
right.
say that. But based on my experience with her, I mean, that's definitely the vibe she gave off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people, it's like they get some fame and they get drunk off it. They
yeah.
buy into the hype. But man, when she stormed off, and then all these people came in that witnessed it, and they're all, it's a very wealthy area. There's
right.
a lot of celebrities. They're not impressed. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
So one guy, he's like this big salon dude, and he owns a bunch of hair places or whatever, and he's from, I can't remember where he's from, but he has an accent. He's like, fuck Paula Abdul, fair. He's like, fair. You know? And it was funny. He's like, we don't care about Petty Abdul. You know, we don't care. You know, it was funny. That was a really bad accent. And
yeah, one was French. The other one sounded
German.
Yeah,
he was just funny. I was like, everybody was just like, get out of here. It was just kind of the idea that she thought she was going to pull rank and, you know, knock on the door and let me show you how it's done, guys. Watch out.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know her personally, but yeah.
It's hard working with the public.
Man, when you are in the food service type industry or whatever, you get to see probably the most debased side of humans in a way. You just don't think it. It's kind of sneaky. You're like, well, everybody eats, everybody drinks, but you see this real like, me, now, mommy, now, why? What all I want? What all I want? What all I want? And I'm like, I had a lady come in and she literally wants this hot chocolate that's only 125 degrees. She wants you to, quote unquote, sandwich the whipped cream. So you have to do, so she wants two pumps of mocha, then you go, you put whipped cream in the cup, then you pour her 125 degree milk on top of the whipped cream, then you do more whipped cream, then you put more milk, then you, you barely stir it, and then, you know, she returns it like every time.
Yeah,
like,
you see, I wouldn't even last a day there. I don't know how you did 3 years, but I salute you for that.
Well, you know,
I'm
it's
telling
rent.
You. Wow.
But yeah, it's funny. It's just like, man, come on, guys.
Yeah.
It's a drink.
But Starbucks is, as you know, that's the way they made it. They made people feel like you can order whatever you want and get it however you want, you know.
And it's like it gives them a sense of feeling like important or something. Like they get to modify this drink. They're like, yeah, I'm going to go and take that non-fat latte and we're going to make it a half calf with an extra shot.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about it that gives them a sense of like, this is really important. Yeah. I'm so important.
Pushing you around.
Yeah. It's like, relax, relax. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Starbucks,
no, but I met a lot of celebrities there, and I met a lot of celebrities there.
Wow.
May they're
You're important.
Ooh, this one's a funny one. I had chandelier earrings on. I'm not like really chandelier, but they're like long dangly earrings.
Right.
And do you know what Frappuccinos are? They're like ice blended beverages.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I get them all the time.
Well, you know the guy from The Shield? The guy with the bald head?
Okay. Uh-huh.
He came in with his daughters, and they ordered like a bunch of Frappuccinos. And I made their drinks and whatever, and they got their drinks. Really nice guy. He comes back with his daughter, and he's like, my daughter found this in her drink, and she pulls like this little barbell out of her mouth, and it's a big piece of metal.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, what is that? And he goes, you think it's your earring? And I'm like, I touch my ear, and then I feel that there's an earring, and then I touch my other ear, and I'm like, Oh my gosh. And I look in the sink and there was a bunch of my earring in the sink.
Really?
And my earring fell off into the blender.
Oh wow.
And I freaking blended up my earring with the Frappuccino, poured it in their cup, topped it with whipped cream, and served it to The Shield.
Wow.
And I mean, he probably could have sued, you know?
Yeah, easily.
But he was so cool.
Yeah.
He's like, don't worry about it. He's like, just make another one. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He could have sued, I don't know, me or the
name. Yeah. You know, I would have reacted the same way. I mean, these things happen. You know, you don't start getting mad at people for this stuff.
Well, you know, he didn't arrest me. He didn't do any Shield action on me. He was way cool.
Good. Well, he is an actor. He's not a cop.
Yeah, I know. You know, but whatever. Yeah, he's cool. He was way cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
So you ended that career after a while.
Time to leave, man. They're holding me back.
Yeah.
It always boils down to singing. I get in trouble.
It's like you start singing?
I sing too loud, too often. That kind of thing.
And while you work?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
Really?
Yeah, especially if you're doing the jobs that are really monotonous, like the hamster wheel. You're like, you just, you know, keep filing, keep doing this, whatever. You just got to, you know, keep your sanity. So I'm like, whoa, do my little Whitney or whatever. And and they're like, Carrie, you need to keep it down. I'm like, okay, well, you know, okay, take a number. Like, I haven't heard that before.
Yeah.
Oh, you're special. Like, I haven't heard people want me to not sing. So it's funny. Yeah, it always boils down to, like, I had a boss that was like, you know, if you can't stop singing, this is going to have to end.
Right.
I'm like, are you telling me that I can't sing anymore? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, not on the job.
Yeah, but no, I got away with it for a little while, then I ended up quitting.
Yeah.
That was a while back.
Yeah.
They're not going to take my pride. They're not going to take my spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your
dignity. My
dignity.
My soul. Yeah. What about you? Did you have any crazy jobs growing up?
Crazy jobs. Not really, you know, but I mean, I did have, early on, I worked at a fast food restaurant and stuff that belonged to my uncle, and I hated it. You know, because you work with the public, and again, you know, everybody had their own special requests and everything.
Yeah.
And and after a while, you just start hating them for wanting all these different things.
Yeah, you just like, you seethe. You just start to seethe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it gives you, I think it gives you kind of a real sensitivity to when I go out and, like, I went out last night with a friend. He and I went to an old restaurant I used to work at, and we knew the waiter, and apparently the service wasn't that great because the guy was busy and, you know, stuff falls through the cracks. Like, right. Deal with it. And my friend was like, yeah, well, you know, this is not really good service. I'm like, relax. Like, you're not, you know, some people have real problems.
Right.
You know, you didn't get your water refilled. Don't get emotional. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, but I don't use care. It's just the point. I was like, it's okay. Like, people are people, man. It's hard. Those jobs are hard.
They really are.
You know?
They really are.
They're hard.
You try to be understanding when you sit there.
Yeah.
I know.
It's not like you're rude.
I mean, you know, I don't mind a waiter being busy, but not being rude, you know?
If the rude will piss you off.
Yeah.
The rude is not.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, sometimes just because they're busy, they become rude, you know, because you're interrupting them, you know? And, you know, and that's a feeling I got the other day when we went on Valentine's Day for breakfast.
Where did y'all go?
You know? We went to a restaurant on Sunset Strip, sort of like sitting on the sidewalk and stuff,
cool,
you know.
Cool.
Pretty cool. It was a beautiful day, you know, umbrellas outside and everything.
Yeah.
And the waiter was just like, you could tell he was really busy, but he was being rude at the same time, you know. And so I was getting irritated with that, you know, because you shouldn't have to feel guilty when you want to ask the waiter for
You're
something.
You're so right,
More bread, more butter, you know. Why do I have to feel like I'm disturbing you, you know?
Yeah, that's not right. They need to hide it. They need to hide it better.
They really do, you know.
Yeah.
And some people should not be waiters.
You know what? That's so true. I had a girl give me attitude the other night. We went to a martini bar, and it's just, I don't know. I think women are a little weird, too.
Like, yeah.
Sometimes they just automatically prejudge, like, oh, whatever, you know. And she just was like, I was with a girlfriend of mine, and she just was like, didn't want to, we started to give her our drink order.
Right.
And it was happy hour, so we were trying to get that, we're trying to get our order in, okay? This is before 7:30, because, you know. And we're like, giving her our drink order. And then she walks away, and we're like, we were going to order some food. And we're like, excuse me, we're like, she's like oh, okay, well, what do you want? Well, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I want a new waitress is what I want, actually, like now. But no, I mean, I put up with it because I've waited tables. But yeah, it's like you feel like you've been accosted or insulted on a time that you're going out to try to have fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, thanks, man.
Yeah. I mean, you're paying good money for, you know, for your food, for the atmosphere, for the service, you know?
Yeah, you
and
don't
And then
wanna...
they expect a full tip and everything, you know, as though
I
they
know.
Earned it.
I know. There's like a really weird, and, you know, tipping out here, it's you know, it's higher than most places.
Is it really?
Well, I mean, it's around, I think, it used to be 10, it used to be 15, and I think standard now is at least 20%.
Yeah, I've been tipping 20 for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
And, but that's a lot of money, you know? I mean,
you really
expect good service for me to pay another fifth of my bill, you know, just because you get paid minimum wage.
Yeah.
You know? And I've always said that, you know, I mean, I have a problem with tips because, I mean, I always tip.
Yeah.
But I don't like when people expect it, you know?
Yeah.
Then it like really gets under my skin and stuff. And I feel that they have to earn it.
What do you think about tipping and like, you're not traditional, like not like being a valet or you know, waiting tables, but something like a coffee shop or you're ordering takeout somewhere and they have a
right.
tip jar. What do you think about tipping those places?
You know, I don't know. Personally, I don't tip if I take it to go.
Okay.
It could be the same restaurant. Like we have an Italian restaurant down the street from my house. And when we go there and sit down, I tip. When I just call in and I just go and pick it up, what are you tipping for? You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like there's any service given there.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like a lot of employers are not paying what they should their employees and putting out an available, you know, creating an option for them to be tipped, but
right.
it's not really a tipping type service
exactly,
that they're doing.
Exactly.
So then what's happening is the employee is expecting and hoping that they get tips to supplement their hourly income when really the employer should be coughing it up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I got a note here that we have an emergency in the other studio, so let us take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio Channel 1. To call in 923-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
Nine and products again. And when I am traveling around the world and have internet connections, I like to gently cup up my balls and listen to LA Talk Radio. It's very nice.
All right. Trying to put out fires.
Are we safe?
I hope I was successful. I don't know.
Man.
We have to get back to the show, you know.
There you go. Show must go on.
Yeah. So did you hear that they captured the leader of the Taliban in Afghanistan? Yes.
When did this happen?
A big leader. This was last night, I suppose. And I guess our military decided to do like a big offensive against the Taliban. So they captured this guy, and they're saying that it's pretty significant, like the most significant capture since 9/11.
Really?
Yeah.
That is so interesting. See, I feel like it's hard to, you know, it's hard to keep up with the Taliban.
Yeah.
It's really hard to find out, like, you know, so much of it's fought and you know, dealt with somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
It's like, not here, out of line of sight. We're not thinking about it. And it's like, I just lose, you know, I lose, not interest, but information
right.
on, you know, knowing, like, where we are with everything and what's going on. So. Yeah.
I know. And they have to fight out there in the wilderness, you know, and there's... in the deserts and the mountains and stuff there. So it's not easy. It's not easy fighting there. And like you said, you know, it's like it seems so remote from us that we don't even, you know, we don't pay much attention to it. But we do have the boys there fighting and dying, you know.
I know, yeah.
You know, for there to be peace in that part of the world. But, of course, I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
And so hopefully they'll take us out of there. I don't know about Obama, man. I mean... You
what
know?
Do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think he made promises he can't keep.
I would have to. I totally agree with you. I mean, I think. Many presidents have done that, but he made some promises that no president could have kept.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like he
right.
was like with Guantanamo Bay. There's no way he could have shut down Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
You know, in fact, the guy that I was dating, he, you know, was a what's it called when they corrections? He worked as a security dude over in Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
Whatever that's called. Anyway,
like the guard or something.
Yeah, like yeah. he worked in like security and management, and he did four team cell extractions and things like that, and prisoner guard. And
right.
It's like crazy. He's got stories for days. But basically, he said, you know, the way that it works is that these people sometimes have been cleared of charges, but their country doesn't want them.
I see.
And people, there's nowhere to send them.
Right.
Where do they go?
So we just keep them there.
Yeah, because you know, they can go back to the country. They won't be accepted, or they'll possibly be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they didn't do anything.
Right.
There's nowhere, and the countries, like we pay countries to take people.
Really?
We pay them to take them. So there's like, there's yeah. no way we could really shut it down. And then there's obviously people that want, you know, they need to be there. They need to be detained.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the whole thing with Afghanistan and the troops and it's just one of those things like we don't want to be there. We're tired of it. We're just like done with it. But at the same time, it's like if we leave, is it a worse situation than when we?
You see, I just feel there are no clear objectives, you know.
Yeah.
And I think we sort of like got lost. The same with Iraq too, you know. It's like we went there, no exit strategy, and we're still fucking stuck there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. That you know, it's. Like you said, you know, I don't think he could have kept that promise, but he shouldn't have made it in the first place, you know.
Yeah.
But that was a platform he ran on, you know. And
I mean, I don't know a whole lot about it, so you know, definitely, like I said, more opinion than fact here. But you know, the need to be over, we've already gone there. We've already made our presence. We've already dissembled a lot, and
right.
then to leave. Although, of course, everybody wants to leave. I mean. My concern is like, you know, really securing that and somewhat stabilizing it before we leave.
Right.
I mean, and nobody knows when and how that's going to end.
Yeah. And it's not going to end. I mean, because you go into these Islamic countries and there are so many factions there
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it's not like there's agreement or something, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you go in there and it's just these people are all fighting each other. They don't know what the hell they want. They have conflicting interests.
That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and we're there trying to police the place.
I know.
You know. So.
It's crazy.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Now, going back to that Kevin Smith from yesterday, remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so supposedly he did like a whole tweeting thing on Twitter.
Yeah, he did.
And you were saying that actually, but it became like this big thing now. And so, you know, I kept thinking about it and I still don't see that there's an answer to that, you know, to someone who's, you know, extremely obese to go on an airplane, you know, because let's say they even make special seats for them. It's like, how many seats do you make? You know?
Yeah.
And, but then again, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen often. So maybe if you made a couple seats like that, it wouldn't hurt. You
I'd
know?
Like to know, I'd like to, I mean, I talked to my roommate last night and again, she's like totally skinny. So it's hard to have those conversations with people that are super, super thin. But, you know, she's like, look, you know, you're spilling over into someone else's seat.
Right.
She said her husband flies a lot and, you know, he's you know, was one time in the middle seat in coach between two really large people. And, I mean, it was just like the most hot, sweaty, uncomfortable thing. And it's just like you said, it's already a tight, close quarters.
Right.
It's like, it's not fun and it's not nice, but it's like, you know, you are taking up more space than given. But then going back to what I said yesterday, it's like, you know, accommodating people that are of all sizes. So I don't know, but she was just like, no, you know, people need to pay for an extra seat. If they're going to take up more than the seat, they need to pay for an extra seat.
Right.
But I would like to know, like, people that are obese that fly, what they think. Do they think it's just? Do they think it's unjust? Do they feel like they're being discriminated against? Or do they understand and they go, you know what, this is just the way it is?
Right.
And I kind of would be curious, somebody that is larger, what their thoughts are on that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, listen, I hate to interrupt the show like this, but I really am called over to the other studio, so please bear with us. We'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, I put out the fire so we can go on with the show.
We are safe again.
Yes, thank you so much for your patience.
Listen,
I appreciate that, Kiara.
Don't even worry about it. I have a question for you. Okay, so I was reading the Drudge Report, and it says psychiatrist from Tampa, Florida, has sex with his patient and bills Blue Cross.
Really?
Yeah.
For the visit.
apparently. And it's actually, they have some of the text messages, which are, you know, like totally sexed up and like, like those kind of text messages.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about, right, Sam?
So it's not like he took advantage of them or anything?
It was consensual. However, they're saying right now that this is considered psychiatric rape because that was his patient.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was not in a, you know, stable place when she was going there for, you know, therapy or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, let me make sure, is he a psychiatrist or a he's a psychologist, excuse
psychologist.
Me.
Psychologist, okay.
Yeah. So
he does therapy.
And it was a long-standing sexual relationship.
Really?
But now
so
she is
So this is with one woman, not many
women. This is a one particular case, yeah.
Right.
And now she's actually suing him.
For taking advantage of her?
Yeah, basically his he broke off the engagement when his wife found out. Yeah.
Duh, you know.
Duh, yeah, you gotta keep it, you know, take it, shutting it down.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You know, I got to say, it's probably pretty tempting, you know, when you're...
tell me how you really feel.
A hot patient coming in there and stuff, you know. And she's vulnerable, and you figure, what the hell, you know?
It's funny. Okay, Sam, tell me how you really feel. You know, I get it. Like, you know, there's a lot of things in life that, you know, there's forbidden fruit.
Right.
The forbidden fruit of like, ooh, I want it, it's dirty, it's wrong. But
yeah.
It's like it's over quick, you can't sustain it. And then it's like, bam, you get a lawsuit. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, no, it's crazy to do it. You know, that's the thing is that people don't understand is that it's okay to have fantasies, but it's not necessarily okay to make them come true.
Because
you know?
Then what happens in fantasies, there's really no responsibility. There's no
exactly.
consequences or aftermath. And
right.
then the reality is that those things hurt people. They destroy people. They, you know, it doesn't bring life. It brings some kind of death in some
yeah.
way, shape, or form.
You know, in fantasy, you're in total control. You
yeah.
know? But then, because I was reading this book on people's fantasies and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Nancy Friday. She wrote, like, My Secret Garden and Women on Top. And
oh, okay.
So she writes books about people's fantasies and stuff. And she says, you know, like, people would fantasize, for example, about a threesome or something,
okay.
right? It sounds great and everything, you know. But then what happens when you try to live it out, then the other people may not be acting the same way they would in your fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's going to be jealousy
mm-hmm.
and there's all this stuff going on. So people have to be careful in making your fantasies come true, you know. If you keep them as fantasies, you'll be fine. But yeah, acting on them in this guy's case, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it was totally out of line.
Well, speaking of sexual fantasies, Tiger Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go there.
Right.
Okay, because everybody else is.
Yeah, might as well.
You know, I don't know what it's up to a million people that are coming out saying that they had some kind of relationship with him.
Right.
And here's my issue, okay? I'm not for infidelity. I find it to be a very, very sad and destructive thing.
Right.
I'm not glorifying it at all. But he's a pro athlete
right.
that was never really a media-based athlete. He really grew on talent and merit.
Mm.
And he has a lot of endorsement deals, and I get it. But he changed the game of golf in
right.
a lot of ways. He
right.
changed the
That's
game of golf.
True.
And I don't like the idea of all the girls. I don't like the idea of the media taking all these women and giving them their 15 minutes of fame
mm-hmm.
and showing pictures of them in the shower, like, oh, and my name is Bambi, and we were seeing each other for 2 whole minutes, and I'm
and
devastated.
I have a sex video.
Yeah, and come check out my blog, wink, wink. You know, I'm just like, why are we glorifying the act
mm-hmm.
and glorifying the women and giving them all this, like, camera time? And that stuff bothers me.
Right.
You know, and I've heard other people say, well, you know, he was a role model and he, you know, he should lose those endorsement deals. Da, 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 da. And I'm just kind of like, it just, to me, it seems like a witch hunt.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like
yeah.
it's one of those, oh, you're the bad person now. Let's go after you. Let's destroy you. Blah, 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 blah. And it's, and I get it, you know, entertainment or whatever,
yeah.
but I just am like, half the people writing this stuff and that are in the media and half the people that are interviewing and the journalists and whatever, I mean, tell me that they haven't had affairs or that they
right.
they haven't done something that's, you know, questionable. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I mean, you know, everybody's holier than thou and stuff. But, you know, I think it's with him, when you're in the spotlight like
yeah.
this, and the, you know, in the public and people watch every move that you make, you
mm-hmm.
can't afford to fuck up like that.
It's true.
You know,
it's true.
And that's the thing. There's another guy that tried to make his fantasies work and, you know, in the process hurt everybody around him.
Yeah,
know?
And I agree
Especially
with you.
Especially himself.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's different repercussions when your life is on display.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you know, I think he lost. Didn't he lose like how many? He lost a lot of endorsement deals.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
he
yeah.
He lost a lot
yeah.
of endorsement deals. I mean, I'm sure he's fine. But
nobody
his wife
to
was
him,
so
though.
Hot.
Yes.
She's gorgeous.
She is gorgeous.
She's beautiful. She's gorgeous. Had two of his kids or something mm-hmm. like that.
Right.
And it's like, and she's not enough. I just think we live in, I think that there's just a side of human nature that's all about consumption. It's about
right.
more. It's not even necessarily about sex as it
right.
is about like ego and pride, and it's like, you know, you have a hot wife, but it's like it's just not enough.
Right.
You got to taste everything
out
there.
And it's hard, you know. I mean, you're out there, and all these women throwing themselves at you and stuff, and you've got all the money and mm-hmm. all this stuff. I can see how it's tempting, but at the same time, you know, most people are able to control themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't, and he let it destroy his life. That's why they're saying it is probably a sex addiction because it's destroying his life. Yes. You know, so that's when it becomes an addiction.
Can he have like the sex addiction with his wife though? Wouldn't that be a little more?
I don't know. Apparently, that's not enough. Yeah, I don't know how it works, but apparently he needs to have a variety, which is, you know, many men are like, you know, I need the variety and stuff.
Well, a lot of that's I just refuse to believe that humans are only biological. I do believe there is that side that is biological, where it's like, you know, there's a lot of things that come naturally to human nature that aren't necessarily good for us, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that urge is there. But I feel like it's about dealing with it healthfully and like, and I think honestly, a lot of people don't want to have a deep intimacy. They like distance.
Right.
And they want the thrill and they want the experience, but they don't really want to be known or to know that deeply. It's like there's some fear there. So instead of having your wife and you have to actually go get past issues and deal with problems and deal with stress and then have great sex in a different way you haven't had,
right.
It's like, no, there's stuff in the way. It's no longer new. The butterflies aren't there.
Right.
I'm going to go
exactly.
chase somebody else.
Yeah.
But then you're never deeper in intimacy with anybody.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's what addictions usually are, is a lack of intimacy with people. You sort of like close yourself in.
Oh, that's actually
interesting,
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, because, you know, I mean, because the more I think about it, the more I realize, you know, because on the one hand, you can say almost every man is a sex addict, you know. I mean, we would just fuck as much as we could.
Yeah.
But I think the point of it is that it ruins your life. And then it's an addiction.
Yeah, I think I think it's like if it's not checked. I mean, like David Duchovny,
right.
who's the star of Californication, which is
right.
a funny show. Have you watched
it? It is. I watched it when the first season.
Yeah.
Yes.
He really, I mean, it's funny. Before the whole thing came out about him being, you know, a sex addict, I was like, man, he is perfect for this role.
Right.
He's nailing this role, no pun intended. But I mean, he just, and I know those guys in LA that are just like, they're lost, they don't know, they want to be a bachelor till they're 80, but they're lonely, they want somebody, but they don't want to give up anything of themselves.
Right.
It's kind of like, oh, I'm such a cool wannabe Mick Jagger hipster, but then like, you know, the wrinkles are setting in, you know, they're not that young anymore. It's just such an interesting, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's hard to judge these people because I often wonder, you know, what would happen if I had all these women throwing themselves at me and, you know, being famous and rich and all that stuff. And, you know, what willpower you have to resist it.
I think that's really true. I mean, even, you know, I'm a nobody right now in the sense that, you know, not on a huge scale. And so I, living here in L.A., have just been so challenged with stuff that, like, I talk to friends and family or people that don't live in a town like this, and they just, there's such a separation by how could you, or how could they, or how could this? And I'm like, man, you just don't get it.
Right.
It doesn't make it right. It just means you're tempted in ways on a daily basis that
right.
you're not here. And like, I met a guy when I was in Detroit for about 4 months, helping out a family member. And I, met a guy who we weren't involved, but, he drove out with me to LA, and I was already here but moving back, and I was just thinking, you know, this guy wouldn't last 10 minutes in Los Angeles.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is, like, he's the good boy back here in the middle of Detroit, suburb, you know.
Right.
And I'm thinking, you know, if you, everywhere you turn, there's like somebody's boobs and sorry, you know, there's somebody's something, and everybody's hot, and everybody's, you know, awesome or whatever, quote unquote, and billboards everywhere, and it's just everywhere. I mean, I wouldn't trust dating a guy like that. Not because he's a bad guy, just because there's a sensory overload.
Right.
And they're not used to that.
Yeah.
And you get them here and they're like, oh. That's why, like, yeah, we kind of make me cautious about dating a guy that's not used to this culture.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So what is the dating scene? I mean, I'm sure you go out and stuff, right? Do you go out quite often?
I go through seasons. I mean, you know, it starts off with you get a little itch. You're like, oh, I want to feel pretty. I want to get a cute dress. Sometimes it's just basically you just want to go out and have fun and you want to feel like the belle of the ball and you want to be with a hot, fun guy and you want to have great conversation and you're not sure if you want it to go anywhere beyond that. So sometimes, you know, I'll go out and just have a fun experience. And then sometimes it's like, you know, I really, really, really want to be with somebody that I can actually grow with and build a life together.
Right.
And, you know, and I mean, I'll just be honest.
Yeah, well, please.
I'll be honest. This is so controversial. But, you know, I am such a bad Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is I don't believe in premarital sex.
Right.
I totally have had it.
Yeah.
But try not to. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those situations. Like, it's a Christian / hypocrite. You know, love sex. It's great. It's awesome. I do believe that it's made for marriage.
Yeah, it's a difference of what I should do and what I want to do.
So I'm just putting it out there. No virgin by any means. But at the same time, I definitely see that God's way is better. I do see that sex is made for marriage. I really do believe that. I really believe it. Yeah.
Wow.
I think that I just think that that's God's context for it. And there's so much going on behind the scenes in sex, too, that and not like cut, roll, take, not that.
Right.
But just I think that there's so much that happens spiritually and emotionally on somebody's part that it is made for marriage and a commitment.
Right.
And I've heard it said that, you know, like a guy, a quote from this guy who he said, before my wife, he goes, I was having the same experience over and over and over with different people. He goes, now with my wife, he goes, I'm having a different experience with the same person.
Right.
And it's totally different. And so, yeah, anyway, I believe in that. But, you know, trying to walk that walk and, you know, I'm a woman that's red-blooded. And do you know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah,
and it's
that,
like,
you get horny.
Yeah, well, but you can put it away. I just, like, you just like, woo, you know, you just, like, you're ready. You know, you're ready. You're ready. So I'm trying to, you know, suppress it and take it to God. And, like, it's just sometimes it's just like you just, you know, you want to.
Yeah, but why suppress it? I mean, that's you. You see, that's the real you.
Again, and I think there's a lot of things, and I know this is so countercultural. I know
but that's okay. I mean, that's
It's not about denying it and saying it's not there and thinking, oh, sex is bad. But sex is not bad. It's awesome. It's beautiful. I mean, I think God invented the freaking orgasm.
Right.
Think about that. God invented a clitoris, which has 6,000 nerve endings. Way to go, God. Okay, what?
See, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, God loves sex, and he made sex. It's not about, oh, it's bad and dirty. It's just there's a context for it. And I believe it's in commitment, and it's through, I say I do to you and I don't to everyone else. And there's a safety, and it's not just the physical, it's the emotional and the spiritual. And, you know, I've experienced it outside, you know, I'm not married, I've experienced it outside of marriage, and I've had great experiences, but I've also seen that there's something missing.
Right.
There's some stuff that's really, really missing there. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you talking about being in long relationships too?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know.
So you just think that marriage is just going to do it? I mean, the fact that you get married.
Well, there's no real, I mean, I don't think marriage is the end of life, and I don't think that it's, you know, like, oh, I get married and everything great happens. No, I mean, I'm on a different path. I mean, I moved out here not to get married. I moved out here for a dream and a career.
Right.
So, you know, I've definitely had to put, you know, I left a relationship for 5 years when I moved out here. I mean, we were in long distance still while I moved out here, which was terrible. Never do long
distance. You don't want to do that. Yeah.
Never. But, you know, I, you know, had to basically make my decision that, you know, this is what I'm going to do. This is what, you know, I'm young. I'm going after this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm supposed to be married, it'll happen and it'll fit. If not, you know.
Right.
It's just not my main goal. But, I mean, definitely when, you know, you're pushing and you're in your 20s and, you know, you're in that prime and, you know what I'm trying to say? And, like, woo. Yeah. So sometimes.
No, what are you trying to say?
I'm just trying to say that, like, there's just a time where, like, biologically, like, I feel like my body biologically is really ready to go. And not just sexually, but, like, I think pregnant-wise. And I don't want to. And here's the thing. I don't want to have a baby right now. I don't. I mean, I love kids. I know I'll be a great mom. I don't have a baby right now.
No.
I can't even fill up my whole. You know, if you can't fill up your whole tank of gas, you know, in your car, you're really not ready to have a kid.
It's not only that, but, you know, I mean, also the fact that today people do it later in life because there's so much to do before that, you know, that you want to actualize yourself and everything, you know. And a child changes your life forever.
Very,
you know, I mean, if you want to make it in entertainment, the child's just going to hold
you down.
Hey,
can you hold my baby while I go do this audition?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, but I mean, biologically, though, I think my body is kind of kicking a bit and like, let's get this thing going. But I'm like, no, we're not. So there's that tug of war, you know.
Right.
Biologically.
Yeah.
I mean, I have time, but I mean, you know, still, I think it's just kind of like.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. Yeah. So now you have to be in a relationship to have sex then?
I believe technically it's marriage.
Marriage.
Yeah.
Okay, so you haven't had sex then in a long time. Now, like, according to my math.
You really called me out. I told you.
Well,
I said, hey, man, I've slipped up, no pun intended, and I definitely have I've gotten down and I've done it and, you know, I've been like a crazy lady. Right. But
when was the last time?
Really, Sam, I got to answer that?
No, okay, you don't have to.
I don't want to answer.
You
know, it was I've been seeing a guy. I told you. I've been seeing a guy and he's awesome and we've been you know.
You've been together.
We've been together, but we're not currently. We're not currently. We've shut it down.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah, which is always harder to go backwards once you've opened up that door.
That's true. How long were you together? Okay, you don't have to answer that either.
We'll get to that. Yeah, it's going to start incriminating. I'm just going to start, you know, I'll be like, yes, I believe in marriage. I believe in Jesus, and I believe in...
Okay, so let's ask this. When was your first sexual experience? The first one?
I was 20.
20?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that after you moved here?
No, I was in Texas.
In Texas?
Yeah.
Wow. Because that amazes me. I mean, you're in a small town and everything. You'd think you have that kind of pressure because there's a limited number of people and that.
No, I mean, I was in a relationship and we were going to get married and that whole thing. And then I moved out here and we were together for about 4 years. And we were still, he would fly back and forth. And at the end of the day, you know, like I just knew that we wanted different things. Mm-hmm. He wants the picket fence and he loves Texas and he loves this, you know, everything fits and there's parking and nothing smells and everything's, you know, you can make a great living and live like a king there. He doesn't like the idea of like living in LA and dealing with all the junk and, you know, and I was like, well, I have to be here in order to, you know, go after the things that I really believe are in me, you know, and in my heart to do. So, so we had to call it off. And it was hard, you know, it's like your first love, your first everything. So, you know, but it's definitely like, it was such a huge experience that I'm grateful that I did have that with him. And we're still friends to this day. And he's actually in another relationship. And I think it sounds like they're going to be a really good fit for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's kind of interesting talking to him about it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, because you know what?
What?
Because I'm telling you, like he's not, I'm like, listen, he is still in love with me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after a long time. We haven't been together for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's been seeing this girl for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I still talk, but he's
still in love with you.
He's still in love with me, and he doesn't have the same feelings he has with her. And I always wonder, like, you know, there's going to be people in your life that you have a certain bond with, and maybe it's not meant to work out, but you have a certain connection. But then I do wonder, when you move on and you don't have that fire for that person, that passion.
Right.
They're great. They make sense. They're a great person. They have a great heart. They're very functional. They're very efficient. But you don't have that for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you think you should marry that person?
No.
No, okay.
Of course not. I mean, I think the only reason you want to marry is because you want to be with that person for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know? Otherwise, any other reason is just not going to work out. You know, because if you don't truly want to be with that person, you're going to be miserable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I think. I definitely think it's... You know.
But I think you should definitely, everybody should play the field a little bit to get it out of their system, because I think what happens is if you're only with a few people, later on you might wonder, you know, am I missing something? You know, what am I missing? You know, and many people marry their high school sweethearts and everything, and they never experience anybody else, you know.
Well, I think everybody's different, and I think a lot of people would agree with you. That's a very popular perspective. I also think, though, that, you know, and saying this, having played the field to a degree, you know, I don't have a lot of mileage, but I've definitely, you know, I've taken the car out for a drive.
Been around the block a few times.
I've just taken it out for a quick drive. But I think that people are people. So when it's kind of cold in a way,
right?
To look at humans and test drive and use each other because you're humans.
But why would you consider it using each other? I mean, consensual sex is not about using anyone.
No, but it's beyond consensual. It's saying, this isn't about two people having true intimacy, and this isn't about two people really, really, really giving themselves to one another. This is about two people kind of, or one person in the two people party, really is how it works out, that's trying to experience something. It's not about the human, it's about the experience.
Right.
And that to me is disconnected. And really, I do believe that, I really believe this, our bodies have, like, you know, you have muscle memory, it's like sexual memory. And so the more you experience a lot of different experiences versus with the same person and you're going into deeper levels of intimacy and physical, it's like your body's is now programmed to kind of shut off at certain times and to achieve certain experiences in certain ways, as opposed to, it's almost like you're stunting your body from actually going into different kinds of physical and emotional and intimate experiences because you programmed it to kind of shut down and be disconnected and for it to be fun. Mm. Just fun.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, I get it. It's fun and it is fun, but
yeah,
you know,
it's adult play, you know? I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well,
you know?
Neither does most of Los Angeles.
Yeah, but you grew up in a traditional home, right? Pretty strict?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely not, actually. I mean, I grew up in the Bible Belt, so you're kind of like drenched
right.
in Jesus culture,
right.
which isn't necessarily a good thing. But, no, seriously.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did. I grew up in, you know, a home that was very, you know, kind of crazy, chaotic. Mm-hmm. And I had some cool, you know, family members that were more like stable, but you know, I live with my mom. My mom's been married 6 times.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a habit.
Wow.
It's like a hobby.
Yeah, but she's a serial bride.
Yeah, I told her, hey mom, just like people, just hang out.
Yeah.
You don't have to marry everybody, like,
yeah.
just relax. But I moved out of her place when I was 10 and moved in with my dad, and mm-hmm. he was in a relationship, and then he got married to a different woman, and mm-hmm. then, you know, there's some trouble there, and he ended up going back to the first relationship.
Mm.
And then I moved in with my aunt when I was 15, and she is, like, amazing. She's kind of like my, you know, my best friend and kind of like my mom. And
right.
I moved in there when I was 15, and she's a public speaker, and she's funny, and she's hysterical, and just an amazing woman. So,
right.
But I've experienced a lot, you know, no judgment. People doing their best to raise kids or whatever.
Right,
but
right.
No, definitely not traditional.
Right.
Definitely not like your
But
stable.
You got values. You got some.
Yeah, they're not
values.
Bad people. Just
right.
just a lot of craziness. Not
right.
bad people, just, you know, craziness.
Yeah, I mean, people instill values in you. I don't think it's a bad thing, you know. And,
no.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody was teaching me or telling me you can't, you know, you got to live this way and this is mm. how you view sex and da da da. I mean, that kind of came through a spiritual journey.
Right.
Yeah, and that's something that's personal and, you know.
Right.
But they put you in the church thing kind of young and you kind of go in and out of church and.
Right.
You know, so that can be good and it can be toxic at the same time because.
Right.
What I found out, you know, a lot through growing up is that the culture of Christianity, unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, is not the heart of Christianity.
Mm.
So, and that could be said for maybe other religions, I don't know, but that
right.
you attribute the way we do things and the tradition and the club and the this and the that as though that is God.
Right.
Whereas that's not necessarily God at all.
Mm.
And that's not necessarily what it means to have a relationship with Christ
right.
and to walk and give your life to God.
Right.
So it's like, moving away was a very good and hard thing because I was able to kind of identify, well, I learned a lot growing up in the Bible Belt, but I also took on a lot of things that aren't necessarily what it means to have a relationship with God, that
right.
I had to actually go through the trenches of life and be away from everything I knew mm. and kind of detox to realize it's not about that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not judging them. If
right.
it works for you, fine. But,
yeah.
you know.
So you went through a spiritual journey? At a certain point in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some more monumental times, but you're always spiritually journey. You know,
right.
you're constantly what is that person?
Right.
God is passionate about that person, regardless if that person will ever seek God or ever will ever know God.
Right.
Or give their life to God. God loves them. So that is so huge because when you come to people with so many differences and,
right.
and whether rights and wrongs or whatever, it's like they're valuable to the Lord.
Right.
So it's challenging, you know? It's like everywhere you go, it's like there are people that piss you off or get underneath your skin or whatever. It's like, but God loves them. God
right.
made them.
Right.
And it's just an interesting kind of way to really see the depth and the richness of God.
Right.
And his love. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, like homeless people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you should be like a preacher or something.
And I said,
yeah, hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if my life backs that up too much. But, you know, trying to love people wherever they are and just seeing how, like, in the eyes of God, regardless of money or the fast track to whatever, it's like, you know, the Bible talks about the kingdom of heaven is given to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like people that have nothing usually are sometimes closer to God because they're at the end of their rope and they have nothing.
Right.
And so the things that they value and what's revealed to them spiritually is usually very rich.
Right.
There's a humility there.
Right.
And, you know, the same idea. Like, if you're living life fast, you're living life hard, a lot of times you're not seeking God and asking the bigger questions. And so you're just kind of going through life just kind of crazy and not really in tune to what your purpose is.
Right.
And what really matters.
Right.
And sometimes you have nothing, you're more in tune. And not that it's bad to have money or anything like that, but usually it's easy to get entangled.
Right.
You know?
Right. But isn't it also true, though, that we're given this freedom of choice
to explore
different things?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many different aspects to the universe and to life and stuff, you know, that we have that freedom to do that, and that's the same God that gave us that freedom.
Absolutely.
Know?
I mean, the cool thing about God is he doesn't force himself on anyone.
Right.
You know, God is, there's an invitation, but there's definitely not like a demand. I mean, you are not made to do anything.
Right.
I mean, God gave us free will. I mean,
because if you did, there wouldn't be any sense to creating all this anyway. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole point is about choice.
Yeah.
And making the choice. You know?
Yeah, that's what people say. You know, like the greatest thing is love, and love involves a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why a lot, you know, if you believe in the Bible or even if you just take the stories as a metaphor, it's like, you know, Garden of Eden. They were told, here's all the different fruit and all the different trees, and everything's great. Enjoy paradise. The only thing I'm going to tell you is this tree over here that looks really good. Just don't eat it. Just don't touch it, or you're going to die. Are you going to die?
Right.
And that's the tree that they went after.
Right.
And the reality is that why did God even put that tree there?
Right.
And it's whether it's literal or metaphorical, it's like there's a choice involved because God wants love.
Right.
He wants love, and love involves a choice. Like, we have to choose him.
Right.
You know?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the Bible lesson for the day.
Well, you know.
All right, so you're going to a couple of
auditions, man.
Auditions.
Yep.
Well, we wish you all the luck.
Thanks.
And we're going to be gone tomorrow and Thursday, right?
Yeah, I'll be back Friday.
Okay, we'll be back Friday, folks. So thank you all for joining us, and we'll be back here on
Thank
Friday.
Thank you, L.A.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To get in contact with the show, please send email to info@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.